Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks for joining us here on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. We also stream live at richarddugan.com, and our podcasts are at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, because, well, that's kind of how these shows start out. They start out on the radio, and they're available online at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. By the way, just so you know, before we go too much further, some of these interviews are longer than what you hear on the radio, which means there's more information, there's more conversation, there's more enlightenment, we hope, more encouragement. So we want you to go to the website, find the interview that you were listening to, and then listen to the entire interview. Sometimes we go an hour. I've even done an hour and a half with one of my guests. Sometimes I'd like to go 2 or 3 hours with some of my guests, but of course we're limited by availability as well. So check it out. See how long some of these interviews are. See how what kind of information. We also link to our guests' website, and we will be giving you that information in just a little bit. So we encourage you to stay with us. We continue our conversation over a philosophy that's fairly new. But I would have to say that it has its roots going back centuries. And we're going to find out about that as well. But we're also going to be talking about a new work that is out there. And we are encouraging you folks to find out more about it. It's a book entitled Invincible Thinking. We're encouraging you to check that out. We'll give you the website shortly. We're going to be talking with a minister with the Happy Science. Yes, they're back again, and we're thankful that they are. We're grateful that they are. And Yushi Hagimoto is our guest. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program today.
Thank you, Richard, for having me.
Now, are you on this day, are you back here in the States? Because I was noticing here that you had moved back, or you had moved to Japan to attend international high school and so forth. Are you back here in the States as well, or are you traveling back and forth?
Oh, I am staying in the States. I'm in California right now, Los Angeles.
And I understand you actually are part of a temple, and this is rather, I found this rather extraordinary. You're currently the minister at Happy Science Pasadena Temple, which has been chosen as one of the most peaceful places to meditate in L.A. I couldn't think of any place in L.A. where it would be peaceful to meditate.
But yeah, Culture Trip has chosen 7 places, and we're included at one.
Well, congratulations on that. I like this analogy here. Life is like building a tunnel. It's arduous and time-consuming. We often encounter setbacks, and we may sometimes feel overwhelmed by the solid rock that stands before us. Well, we're going to talk about invincible thinking. Apparently, it is the powerful drill that lets us drill through this rock. It's the dynamite that lets us open a crack in the mountain of difficulties. And when we practice invincible thinking, we learn both from our successes and failures and cultivate a strength to create our own future and share that wisdom with those who will follow our footsteps. We certainly hope folks will do so if, in fact, we are moving forward in a positive way. And I have to say, in a way, I feel bad about having to repeat this phrase in almost every interview that I do. It doesn't matter who I'm talking with. In the times in which we live, the struggles and challenges that we're going through, I guess it wouldn't make any difference, really, who was running the country or what catastrophe had befallen a particular part of the nation or what group of people is now in the spotlight due to just bad behavior or horrific behavior and so on and so forth. So I guess it really doesn't make any difference in that respect. But I know that it becomes, and I'm susceptible to it too. I wish I wasn't. I have to tell you, I get so frustrated at my inability to separate myself from the being drawn into the collective social / cultural mindset that's out there today. You know what I'm talking about too.
Yeah.
What about you? I mean, I would think, some people might think, well, gee, he's a minister with Happy Science. He's there at the temple, the best place to meditate in the world, one of seven. His life must be fantastic. He doesn't have any problems in the world.
Well, you know, I believe that everyone does have a problem. And, yeah, it's the social climate right now is very, very controversial. It's very confusing. There's a lot of information. I mean, we are living in an age with a flood of information. And so, yes, it's a tough environment we're living in. I agree on that part.
Well, but then again, when you start to I'm going to use a couple of words here that most people are not familiar with. When you start to vet and or parse that information, you begin to discover that some of that information, and again, this is based upon what you choose to use as your definition, some of it is factual and some of it isn't, but unfortunately that which isn't seems to get the greatest notoriety for the longest time. I remember during the 500th anniversary, this was back in the 90s, we were celebrating the 500th anniversary of Christopher Columbus sailing the ocean blue in 1492 and quote unquote discovering America. And at that time, I was hearing three different versions of the history of Christopher Columbus. Now, here we are, 2017, 2018. Now, people are dropping Columbus Day for Indigenous Persons Day because of everything that transpired after Columbus came to the continent, which actually his first landfall was not the continent, it was an island. But, I mean, it's like, it took them 500 years to finally tell us the truth, which we got three different versions. So I figured, okay, it's got to be somewhere in the middle of the three. But using that sort of as a general example, okay, how does Happy Science address this concept of information and then using invincible thinking? We'll get into that process as well, but using invincible thinking to parse it or vet it, to make sense of it so that we know what we should be thinking about and what we should discard.
Whew, that's a big question. But let's see, information.
I mean, it's not an easy answer. I realize it's a very big question, but I think that it's a very important question because the same issues come about when you start talking not just about politics, but you start talking about religion, you start talking about science, you start talking about all of the other conversations you can have about all the other subjects, and everybody has their own quote-unquote opinion, but they want to make their opinion objective fact, and it's impossible to do so because an opinion is subjective.
Right, right.
So how does...
Maybe,
go ahead.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's not related to this book, Invincible Thinking, but the author, Riho Okawa, he's written other books, and in other books he addresses this topic. And what he's saying is that knowledge is power. So, like Benjamin Franklin said, knowledge is power. So, in order to drill a hole into the sea of information of facts and non-facts, or like, as you said, opinions, it's important to start by reading books. Because books, it takes a long time to be published. And, like, right now we're living in the age of SNS and the internet, which everyone can become an author, which is a good thing. We believe that it's like we're able to democratize the opinions of people. However, the contents of the intellect has decreased to a very shallow level. But a book that stands the test of time has a lot of, we call it a universal wisdom. It's like a wisdom that transcends time. And by continuing that, you start finding a new self where you're not wavered by small information, but you start seeing like an unshakable mind. So what we suggest, or what the author suggests, is that start by reading books.
Okay. But you're not specifically stating which books. You're just saying start grabbing books off the shelf and start taking that information in. Is it that over the course of time, we will begin to learn how to, say, critically think and process this information?
Exactly. That's what I meant. Yes.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this aspect, this concept of invincible thinking. Give us a definition of it, and then let's dive into some of these steps of beginning to learn how to do that. Because I think we really need it these days.
No, we do. Like you said, this world is filled with a lot of sufferings, a lot of failures. If you're living in America, it's a very, very competitive society. And so you're always facing challenges in everyday life. So without this type of philosophy, it's really hard to sail through smoothly. So like you said, it's very important right now, I think.
So what are the steps, if we can put it in that context, for learning how to think invincibly, if I can reverse those words around?
Well, I guess the first step is to know the definition of invincible thinking. And earlier in this interview, you addressed like the invincible thinking as using the metaphor in this book. It's like a drill to open up a crack through the mountain of adversity. Mm-hmm. And that metaphor is exactly correct. But if I were to say it more concretely, what's written in this book, the definition of invincible thinking is adopting a perspective where you believe that you can always learn from any kind of situation. In other words, in any situation or environment you're put in, you can always grow and develop and refine your soul. And by adopting this concept, we start taking a different view towards the world, even adversities and suffering. So I think adopting this definition that we can create this sort of mindset where we're invincible against any kind of situation. I think that would be the first step.
Okay. So in other words, if I adopt this philosophy of invincible mm-hmm. thinking, I could conceivably, not necessarily that I'd want to, probably I'd think twice about it, but I could sit and I could watch the news one night and process that information to the extent that I'm not going to be drawn in emotionally. I can, with the information that I'm being given, because remember, the news media only has so much time in a news cycle to get out certain information. Sometimes they withhold and so on and so forth. But at least I'm able to take what I am given, and then I can go search out other sources to see if I can't get more information to maybe balance that out or corroborate what I have just heard. Because this is one of the interesting things, whether it's regardless of what the story is, we're only getting a small piece. We're also only getting information that they have now at this time, and that more information is coming. And so, and yet there are those who will make a snap decision now when the event has just happened and there hasn't been time to vet the information, hasn't been time to parse through all of the different sources that they need to go through to determine what this really means. So is that kind of what you're saying?
Exactly. You put it the exact right way. That's invincible thinking. You're thinking flexibly. You're not being confined in the box. You can think, you know, you're thinking of different options. You're leaving some room for different, different ways to interpret what's coming out. So, yes, that's exactly invincible thinking.
Now, I've spoken with a number of representatives of the Happy Science. I'm not sure if any of them were ministers. They might be now. But I want to ask you, what is it about the Happy Science philosophy, as I basically am using a different word rather than religion, because quite honestly, that's what they are. Each one is a philosophy, whether it's Hinduism, Buddhism, Zen, whether it's Christianity, whether it's Buddhism, Muslim faith, or any of the Asian religions. They're all philosophies. They're all mindsets. So what attracted you? What drew you into accepting this particular philosophy? And where were you at the time you chose to embrace it?
Well, thank you for asking me that question, Richard. Actually, this book that we're talking about right now is the book that helped me, you know, accept this philosophy, Happy Science. And I was, it's a personal story, but I was 18 and I graduated high school. I was enrolling into a university in Japan. It's electrical engineering. And I was having a tough time, a very tough time. And I couldn't find a way out. However, when I read this book, I found out that in this book, there's a sentence that says, what you think is who you are. And that was like, that, I don't know, it kind of like lit a bright light inside my darkness that I had in my mind. And ever since then, I incorporated this invincible thinking in the ways I see things and the ways I act and the ways I accept things and how I see things. And then things literally started to change. I found more happiness. I found more fulfillment. I found more friends coming towards me. I found more satisfaction in my life. So I guess, like, the first beginning point of accepting this philosophy was that it pragmatically and practically worked for me, I guess, would have been the first step.
So it worked for you, and that's one of the things we talk about here. We lay out a big old table. I mean, you think about the holidays here in the States, and you think about Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the food that's laid out on the table for the main meal. Well, we kind of do the same thing, only we call it a smorgasbord. We ask people to come to the table, take what resonates with them, what works for them, supports them. And we're not saying that the happy science is the end all and be all. We are saying that it's a possibility and that we ask you to consider the possibility. And we talk about providing, you know, giving people choices and knowledge of those choices. All right, the happy science. Okay, the happy science is one of those ideas. And if we left it at that and we didn't explain it, we didn't inform people about what it was, then they said, well, that sounds nice, but I don't know what it is. So we try to give them a leg up by doing these interviews, providing the link to your websites so that people can continue their research. But at least in this context, give them that framework that says, all right, this is what it is. I even did an interview many years ago with a couple who were of a particular philosophy, as I kind of put it back then. And I said, I'm not going to tell you of what philosophy they're with until the end of the program, because I knew that if I told people what it was at the outset, they wouldn't listen because there's so much negative energy regarding this particular faith, this particular belief system. Because I wanted people to make up their own minds, you know, listen to what's being said. If you think it's a bunch of hokum, fine, that's okay. It's not for you. But it seems to me, Yoshi, that this whole aspect of finding one's place, not only just in the universe, as you know, we're all trying to figure out what our place is in the world, especially nowadays. But what should I believe? Who should I follow? And I'm curious as to the happy science. And maybe it's no one. Who do you follow, or is it more of a what?
Well, I guess it would be be both who and what. And the reason, I'm sorry to confuse you, but the reason why is, let me give you a little more details. So the what would be God in Happy Science. We believe in God, and we can call him God, we can call him the eternal Buddha, we can call him Allah, we can call him any word that you'd like to use, but that higher concept, the higher powerful force of love that has created this whole universe. And so that would be the what, and the who would be our master, the founder of Happy Science Temple, and his name is Master Yuho Okawa, as the author of this book. But he would be the who, because he's a spiritual leader who channels the what. So it would be the who and the what.
Okay.
Would be my answer.
All right. And what is it? What does he channel? And is it actually, do we go ahead and say he's channeling this from God?
Correct. God. Yes.
Okay. So what is it that he's channeling?
What he channels is the teachings or the universal truth. And so, like, so this book, Invincible Thinking, is one of his, I guess, teachings. But it's like a common rule that works for every person to become happier. That's what he channels.
Okay.
A philosophy that'll make you happier is what he channels.
Now, I've brought this up a number of times in these programs when we talk about happiness. And I quote from our Declaration of Independence that there are these inalienable rights, and of these, which means there are more than these, but of these we have life, liberty, and those we get, all right? If we're reading it, we have life, okay? And hopefully, if we're reading it, we also have liberty. We have the freedom to move about, to say what we want under the First Amendment, on and on and on and on. However, the third one that they list, and again, this isn't all of them, but this is the third one that's listed, you don't get happiness. You get life and liberty, but you don't get happiness. But you do get the pursuit, the pursuit of happiness. What is, in the context of Ryuho Okawa and the Happy Science, what is happiness?
Well, we define, happiness itself is a very deep subject. So there's many different ways to phrase it, many different ways to define it. But in a nutshell, is what we believe happiness is the moment you feel the growth of your soul. When you feel that, we call that enlightenment, but when your soul is growing, when you feel that you are able to develop into something higher, then that's the happiness what we're talking about in Happy Science. It's not a material object, it's not a material thing, so it's more of a spiritual happiness, I guess.
So are there, because I myself have worked, I worked for 15 years at a Christian radio station. I was born and raised Roman Catholic in the Western Rite of the Church. I've had experiences being exposed to the Eastern Rite of the Catholic Church. I actually attended a Mormon service once as a teenager. And then, of course, my mother made me go to Mass after that. But I have been exposed to and learned about Hinduism and Buddhism, and I think my favorite story of the Buddha has to do with his sitting at the base of the Bodhi tree and basically realizing, as he's been chasing enlightenment, as soon as he stops chasing it, he'll find it, which is kind of a paradox because you think you have to search for it, you know? I've been exposed to a lot of different things, and I'm wanting to learn more about the thoughts and the ideas I have heard of, but not studied much about many of the different philosophies of Asia, whether it's in Japan or China or Vietnam or Thailand or any of the other Southeast Asian countries, because there are a myriad of them. That's the thing that is so fascinating to me. It's like in the West, you know, you have Judaism, which I've also learned a great deal about. You have the Islamic faith. You have Christianity. You have a few. You have the offshoots, yes, but you have those three bases, right?
Right.
You have Buddhism. All right. There's a base. All right. Taoism, I guess, is all sort of along the same lines. So I don't know how you would categorize the faiths of the Far East. I don't know that you could lump them all together, or if you've got to separate them. And then, of course, what is it? What do they believe? You know, we have Native American traditions here in the States, where you have the Great Spirit. And again, I know very little about Native American traditions and the philosophy there. And it's not that you're here representing the Far Eastern religions, the philosophies, but obviously you were raised and educated in that area. Again, I'm sure before you became a minister of Happy Science. Can you enlighten us a little bit about the Far Eastern philosophies at all?
Yeah, sure. I'll try to do that to the best of my knowledge. But I believe if I were to classify the difference between the Western and the Eastern religion, it would be monotheism and polytheism. So Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, they believe in one God. So that's monotheism. And the Eastern religions, they're called polytheism, such as Hinduism, Shintoism, Japanese Shintoism, Buddhism also. Like, a lot of gods come out in their scriptures. So that's polytheism. And the reason why they're able to adopt polytheism is because the founder or the starter of that religion was very tolerant and was, I guess in modern terms, they were open-minded. So, I'm not saying that the Western founders were not open-minded, but so very, very tolerant.
Yeah.
So I guess, I think that tolerance led to, if you look at the history of, let's say, Buddhism, Buddhism first starts separated into two different streams. One that went southeast, towards Thailand, that's the Theravada Buddhism. And the one that went through the Middle East, went through the Silk Road into China, into the Korean Peninsula, into Japan, that's the Mahayana Buddhism. And along the way, there's been different schools that took parts of Buddhist teachings and started their own temples. And in Buddhism, because it's a very tolerant religion, they accept that. They don't see that as a heresy. So I guess the reason why there's so many different sects and different teachings is, one, because the founder was, the core teaching itself is tolerant.
Okay. Well, you know, to me, it is so important for us, in my opinion, it's so important for us to learn about these other philosophies, because nothing is created in a vacuum. Everything that's ever existed, especially when it's in the context of philosophical thought, is an offshoot. It is an outgrowth of what came before. Now, there would be those who would argue, well, yeah, but there had to be the first one. Well, okay, I can't argue with you there, but that had to come from the mind of the individual who first came up with it. And, you know, you might say, well, the cavemen, as opposed to Adam and Eve, it was flight or fright and survival. I don't know where the concept of a God came from first. I haven't researched it to that degree. But obviously there were things going on. You had storms that rolled through. The weather's changing and all of these different things. You were chasing around other animals just to survive if you couldn't find things. I mean, all of these things are very fascinating questions to me as to how a lot of this got started. I'm not even going to go back to the Big Bang. We won't go there. But I say to people, look, Who was the first person who thought that it was a good idea to put an artichoke into hot water for maybe 10 or 15 or 20 minutes and then peel off the leaves and just eat the end that you pulled out? Scrape off the meat, if you will, from the fruit or the vegetable. Who was the first person? And then I also think, too, when we come into our modern age, about the car and the internal combustion engine. And I've seen a carburetor, all right? My analysis of a carburetor is it was designed by a guy who had way too much time on his hands. Because I know very little about cars, but I do know it's a very complicated piece of equipment, at least from my standpoint. Obviously, a mechanic, he's going to know. He could take it apart and put it together in maybe, who knows, 30 seconds, like they do with their weapons in the military. You know, you're trained to take apart and put your weapon together very fast.
Right.
He probably could do that. But I always find that fascinating, where some of these initial ideas came from. Because if there was nothing before the wheel, for example, then where did the idea come from? Where was the inspiration? So now you take it to a present day, and Ryuho Akawa, and he is now channeling from God these wonderful ideas. Some would argue, I'm sure, this has to have come up, I'm sure, once or twice. wait a minute. We already have the inspired word of God in this document or that document or the other. Okay, depending upon your philosophical foundation. How do you, as a minister in the Happy Science, how do you address that query, that quandary, that even that argument that, no, Okawa's a false prophet and that's garbage because we already have the word of God? And again, it could be in any of the, let's say, the three major religions that we talked about earlier.
Well, that is a fundamental question that us humans have been pursuing in the past, in all of our history. Where did it all come from? What's the origin? But, so the answer in Happy Science, this is a really fascinating book. I actually recommend you reading it. It's called The Laws of the Sun. It's the first book that Ryuho Okawa has written.
Repeat that title.
It's The Laws of the Sun.
The Laws of the Sun.
Yes. But so where did it all start from? I guess our answer is simply God. Maybe this will turn into the chicken and egg kind of a thing. But,
yeah.
So God created everything with his will, because he wanted to create a place where everyone can go through a eternal soul evolution and find happiness. So God has his thought. And so God would be the Alpha. And also God would be the Omega, the very beginning and the very end, the one that started everything and the one that will end everything. So God started it all. But, like, as you said earlier, there are people who say, like, well, I already had my God. I already know God. And people say that. So what Ryuho Okawa explains is the structure of the heavenly world. He actually explains very explicitly in that the book, The Laws of the Sun, he explains that there's even a hierarchy in the realm of God. And different types of gods or saviors or prophets come to earth periodically at a different time, at a different place, to give teaching so they can convey the teachings of God. But so they take turns. And however, they have their own personality and they have their own color. So that's why the difference of religion occurs, because the founder, the starter, has a different color expressing the different parts of God. So that's the reason why there's the differences with the flow of history, but there is the one on the very top, and we call that the Supreme God. So the structure that Happy Times sees the spiritual world is not a polytheistic or a monotheistic religion, but it's like a Supreme God hierarchy-style spiritual realm, is the answer I have now. But if you have any more, if you have further questions, if you can help me out, that's like what I can answer right now, what's coming to my mind.
Well, if people wanted to get further information about the happy science, as well as the invincible thinking process, as well as a copy of the book, what one website would you recommend they go to?
OkawaBooks.com.
Okay.
It's OkawaBooks.com.
All right. We encourage folks to do that. OkawaBooks.com. We will be linked to that website as well, because we want people to do the kind of research and investigation that I think is critical, because it's something that's lost, quite honestly. You know, which is really unfortunate, because there's so much that's out there that's available to us, but because of our individual, well, I mean, it's ingrained in us from childhood, our individual biases from our parents and our families and our church or synagogue or temple, whatever source that might be. That I remember, as much as I really thoroughly enjoyed being a member of the Baha'i faith for about a year and a half back in the 90s, the one frustration that I had that was always nagging in the back of my mind was I was told that I could search anywhere I want. I could read anything I wanted to, whether it was the writings of the founder or others of the faith or outside the faith, just go ahead. Because, as it was said to me, all that other stuff that's out there outside the faith, it's going to lead you right back to the faith. And I thought, that was a minor thing. It didn't put me off in that regard. But I thought that seemed like a kind of an arrogant position to take, that it doesn't matter what you read, because you're going to wind up right back here anyway, okay? Whereas at the Christian radio station, I began to process and think, okay, well, as a human being, there are a myriad of foods. I mean, millions of different foods and combinations that I can try around the world. I can travel around the world to a myriad different places. I can get an education pretty much anywhere and learn about just about anything I want. The millions of different possibilities, they're just endless, right? Myriad of different things that I could drink, and on, and the list goes on and on. However, when it came to spirituality, they said there's only one way. And I'm going, that doesn't make any sense. That is totally illogical, that there's only one path and it's yours.
Right.
I'm curious as to the happy science and its position, if you will, or its take on our searching for God, our serving God, our living for God, our being happy, because that's what it's all about. Talk to us about that, if you can.
Thank you for pointing that out. That's what's really fascinating about this temple, Happy Science. So Riho Okawa, he provides so much information to, like, open our eyes, right? And what I mean by that is, like, in the pursuit of God, what to believe in, and some religions say this is the only path, but the modern academic world has taken the opposite way, is that there's, like, searching to, you know, new places and find happiness by gaining new information. So how does this all work? What's happy science's position? Is that first what we say is that you got to look at the flow of the history. So monotheistic religions, they started around 3,000 years ago, first Judaism and then Christianity and then Muslim. But before that, what were the prevalent religions would be the strongest nation back then was Greece and Egypt. And these two countries, or that empire or whatever, they believed in polytheism. So there were a lot of gods. And these gods were really close to human beings, if you read Greek mythology and all that. And they're very close, and that was good. But then Happy Science's take is that, like I said earlier, in the spiritual realm, gods also are living in the spiritual world, and gods are always thinking of how to guide humanity into a better direction. And they do experiments on Earth. So once they did a polytheistic religion in Greece and Egypt, and it worked really well, but then because the gods became too close to humans, they lost their authority. So then what the gods came up with is, we got to bring back the authority of God, the importance of faith, believing in the spiritual world from the Savior, the Savior teaches about. So then they started the next movement of monotheism. So there's a long flow of history, and we call this God's management. It's called God's management. So planet Earth is like a company. Let's say it's a company, and there's a CEO, the Supreme God, and there's also the board of directors, the different God. And they work together to create a better world for humankind. So in the pursuit, so like the, I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot, but going back to my path is the only way, the reason why that philosophy came out was because it was to innovate the importance of having belief in God. However, it's not always been like that, and that's not the only answer. We're just in the flow of time, and that was important 2,000 years ago. But again, now, we're entering a different age. We're entering a global age. We're entering an age with science helping us connect from different countries, different places. The world is becoming one. That means all the information is becoming one. That means all these philosophies are colliding each other now. So now is the time to start a new type of philosophy, or a religion per se, to help people open up to the truth, to help people open up to the plans that the gods have been creating. And that, I believe, is happy science, is what it's teaching.
Is there an aspect of, and I have to use the terminology that I'm familiar with.
Please.
Yeah. Is there an aspect of salvation within happy science? Because it seems to me like that the equivalency would be to be happy.
Exactly. So we do have salvation, and that's to, well, from my position as a minister, that's to help people find happiness in their lives. And that's what we call salvation. Saving people is the same as making them happy.
Yeah.
Or happier.
The book is entitled Invincible Thinking, An Essential Guide for a Lifetime of Growth, Success, and Triumph. We are talking with Minister Yoshi Hajimoto, and he is a minister of a temple. Is that correct?
Yes, we call it a temple.
And it's in Pasadena, California, considered to be the best meditative location in Los Angeles, the best place to meditate in L.A. Again, to me, it seems a bit of an oxymoron. But hey, you know, people, you know, I remember a quote from Teresa of Avila who says, God is among the pots and the pans. Hey, there are people who are meditating while they're cooking. So I'm sure that it is possible to meditate in Los Angeles. And we are going to continue our conversation with Yoshi, and we'll ask you to stay with us. The website, if you want to get more information, is okawabooks.com. O-K-A-W-A, Okawa Books, BOOKS.com. We'll stay with us here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Rich Dugan. We'll have more in just a moment.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking about invincible thinking. We're also talking about the happy science. We've had these folks on numerous times over the last few years. As a matter of fact, Yoshi, I remember the very first interview that I was supposed to do with a guest from Happy Science. Name escapes me. And I remember that I was suffering through, and this we'll dive into this area too. And I was suffering through really, I was really sick. But I had this interview. I really wanted to do this interview with this person because I had not heard about the Happy Science before. I had not heard about Ryuho Okawa. And I hadn't heard about any of the other aspects of this wonderful philosophy or the law of the sun and so on and so forth. I came into the studio and I'm interviewing this gentleman. And I kid you not that during each question, even though I'm wearing headphones as I am now, I was laying my head down on the counter on my arms, resting as the guest spoke. I actually had someone listen to that interview. I said, do you think I should air that? You know what they said? No, don't air that. Not because of the guest, okay? Because you don't sound good at all.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And I thought, well, you know, I could always go back and I could always reinsert my voice now that I'm doing considerably better. Healing, health and wellness, and, you know, those are all tied into happiness. We've heard a lot of the stories, scientific evidence about a happy person is usually a fairly healthy person and vice versa. Let's talk about the, as it's been revealed, the healing power of the happy science, or of happiness, if you will.
Well, I guess, like, you know, they say that there's a sound mind and a sound body. So health is a very, very important aspect for our happiness. And in this book that we're talking about, Invincible Thinking, what he states, author states, is that you're the only person who can take care of your own body. You're the only person who has a sole responsibility to maintain the health of your body. I mean, someone else can tell you to exercise, but who's doing it? You. So in order to maintain a long, happy, healthy life, we got to start off by having this awareness that it's you yourself and the consequences you're going to be paying for it. So let's first be responsible for your physical body. It's like the philosophy that we introduce here in this book.
So what are the aspects thereof? And what I mean is, what do we need to do to activate that healing power through the happy science, or within it? I'm not sure exactly how to phrase that. You know, I know that, for example, in Christianity, there are a lot of different modalities. One of them is laying on of hands. Another is prayer and so forth. But what about the healing happy science?
Well, I guess, like, the physical aspect, obviously, is exercising, getting enough sleep, and eating healthy. Those are three basic points. But spiritually speaking, because we are spiritual beings, we have souls inside this physical body, which is the blueprint of our physical body. So if your soul or if your mind gets ill, it materializes into your physical body. That's how we see it. And that means that if you have negative emotions that are lingering inside your mind for a long period of time, that materializes into, let's say, cancer or other illnesses. So in order to heal this, all you got to do is fix the blueprint. Fix your subconscious thoughts.
Okay.
And in order to do so, you need to correct your mind, such as forgiveness, having a peaceful mind, these types of things, or having a mind filled with love. And by filling your heart with these, or gratitude, with these positive energy, you can actually heal your physical body.
Reminds me of a line from of one of my favorite films going back many years, a movie with actor Paul Newman. The movie is entitled Cool Hand Luke. And the chain gang jailer, if you will, or warden, basically he's giving him a hard time because Luke is just not getting with the program. And finally, he has his guards beat him down and basically tells Luke, you've got to get your mind right. And in a manner of speaking, that's what you're talking about without the beating. But that's the transformation that we need to go through in terms of, and that's where I think, if I'm correct, invincible thinking comes in. That is going to help us to make that transition, that transformation, right?
Yes, that is correct.
And it's not a real complicated process, it doesn't sound like. Seems pretty simple.
Exactly. Thank you for pointing that out. It's so simple. And it's so easy to do. All you got to do is forgive.
Yeah.
Forgiveness. Or forgetting. Or letting go of that grudge that you've had. And by doing so, like, you know how they say to forgive is to forgive yourself?
Yeah.
It's not a metaphor. It's not a literary term. It's reality. Because when you forgive others, you release the negative energy outside of your body. So you're actually saving yourself by practicing forgiveness. And the people who have been forgiven, obviously, they'd be happy too. So it's just like a chain of reaction of happiness. And you can be the trigger. And it starts from how you think. And that's invincible thinking.
Well, it seems to me like a great opportunity for people. I know that there are people listening who are saying, wait a minute, you know, Yushi, this person did some horrific things to me. How can I forgive my father, my mother, my brother, my sister, my coworkers, my boss, my this person, my that person? Because what they did, let's take current events. We're hearing story after story after story of inappropriate behavior by individuals. Mm-hmm. It's both men and women. And the people are coming out of the woodwork. And again, mm-hmm. Now we're going back to the whole conversation we had earlier about information. I don't know what mm-hmm. is or isn't true, and it's not important. But it just seems to me, and this is not a get out of jail free card, folks, for you to come and give me a hard time. but I have a hard time hanging on to stuff like that because I just don't want to. Yes, I get upset, and when I talk about being bullied in school, I get a little passionate about it. But I don't have a specific individual in mind, okay? Yes, I can name off names, but, you know, I look back and I'm going, they were ignorant. They were poorly taught by their parents. They had low self-esteem. They didn't think any better of themselves, so they had to bring other people down to their level. And so in a matter of speaking, I sort of have pity on them. And I say, you know what? Hey, it is your fault in that you are responsible for your actions. However, number one, that's in the past. And number two, it's just not worth it. Now, I ain't going to no high school reunion. I have no interest in doing that. But I'm not going to sit here and if they were to come to me and have a conversation and dialogue and what have you, I would do that. You know, I would do that, and I wouldn't say, "Hey, well, you remember what you did to me in school?" I wouldn't go there. That doesn't serve anybody. And yet, there are television programs and movies. I see some programs where the premise of the program is all about revenge. That's all it is. I don't want to watch it. I'm going. That is a weak premise from my perspective. Just for revenge. Because what do you get at the end? All right, you get your pound of flesh, and that's all you get. And now you have regret, and you have to go through a deeper process of forgiveness and on. forgive me for putting it this way, but is there a trick? Is there a trick? A switch I can flip, Yushi, that will turn on the forgiveness, and I guess we should start with for self, so that then I can turn around and I can forgive those who have wronged me. And this is for the folks that are out there, because I'm the kind of person, I want to give people the benefit of the doubt, you know? All right, so you wronged me back there in 2003. So what? Okay, this is 2017. You've changed. I've changed. If you do me wrong again, it's still on you because I came into this with a good heart. So is there a trick or a switch?
Man, if there was a trick, it'd be so easy. But I guess the reason why there's a lot of different religions and there's a lot of different churches and temples and, I don't know, synagogues and mosques that exist is because, I guess, it's to help people awaken to the power of forgiveness. And it's not an easy thing. There is not an easy switch. I mean, like an enlightened person as yourself, you're at the level of you're able to control your mind. So we call that enlightenment. You don't let your emotions get you. And you are the controller of your emotions. And that's the first state of enlightenment. And however, not many people can reach that level. So there's not a simple switch, but I guess it's just, we just got to keep on telling them that in the end, if you don't forgive, you're just going to be hurting yourself. And I know that forgiveness is a very hard thing, so you can't do it like in 1 year or 2 years. But you know how in the world of law, there's the term called the statute of limitations?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, if something occurred 10 years ago, they can't pursue that anymore because it's so long time ago. People forget, some people die and who are considered to that. So, like, using the statute of limitations to your mind is also important. And I guess by using these kind of words, we just need to guide them and lead them to a forgiving heart. And however, in order to do so, people who can't forgive, if you analyze what kind of mind they have, is that it's like a storm inside their mind. It's all, they're angry, and it's very, you know, it's not a happy state. So in Happy Science, we incorporate meditation as a practice to learn forgiveness by breathing calmly and calming your mind and trying to forgive that person in meditation. The more you practice, the better you get at it. It's kind of like training the muscles of your mind to be able to control your emotions. So I guess it's not an instant switch, but it's one right direction is to practice forgiveness meditation.
Talk to me about meditation from the Happy Science perspective. Can you kind of quickly run through, we won't take a lot of time here, but maybe go through a simple meditation people can do following this program to help them to relax or focus and begin to tap into that invincible thinking process?
You know, I guess the most simple step is to clean your room, be by yourself, shut off your smartphone, and sit straight up and practice something called breathing concentration meditation. So all you do is you concentrate on your breath, and you breathe in from the nose and out from the mouth. And every time you inhale and exhale, you count a number. So every time you inhale, you say one. Every time you exhale, two. And when you go up to 10, you don't go to 11. You start from one again. There's no destination. There's no objective of going higher numbers. We just continue 1 to 10, 1 to 10, focusing on your breath. And by doing so, kind of like restores your soul to a healthy state. Mm. And when you feel the calmness of the mind, that, I guess, would be the first step to invincible thinking, because when your mind is calm, you're in control of your emotions.
Minister Yushi Hashimoto has been our guest, and we're talking about the Happy Science. We're talking about invincible thinking, and we encourage you to go to okawabooks.com. We have a link to the website for both this particular work and other interviews that we've done with the folks from Happy Science, and you'll be able to do further investigation. First things first, I want to thank you so much for sharing with us from your perspective and telling us about your experiences with the Happy Science. And we'd invite you, you're not that far away, that if you ever find yourself up here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
You know, that would be great. And it was such an honor to be with you, Richard, today. Thank you for those nice questions. And I honestly love what you're doing, and you're doing such a great thing to this world. So thank you so much, and wishing you the best luck.
And before we let you go, I thank you. I have three final questions for you. and you've probably answered them to some degree during the program, but I'll ask them to you directly. And again, the website again is okawabooks.com. We encourage you to check out Invincible Thinking by Ryuho Okawa. And we encourage you to, it can't hurt anything. I mean, you've got nothing to lose. You got everything to gain. You've got happiness to gain. So we encourage you to do that. First question, Yushi, is who is Yushi Hajimoto?
I am the minister here at Happy Five Pasadena, LA, and I have devoted my life to offer every ounce of the rest of my life to bring happiness in this world.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I know that what I'm trying to achieve is not going to be accomplished in my lifetime, but I know that our aspirations and noble aspirations are eternal. People will pass it on to next generation. So I'm going to say it, even though it's really big. It's the creation of utopia on Earth, where everyone is happy, where everyone is sharing happiness, and where everyone can understand each other, surpassing different countries, different politics, different religions. And all people holding their hands together is the dream that I would like to accomplish. Even if I can't, I want to pass it on to the next generation.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
It's to be like the wind of love, where even if people recognize me or not, they felt that something good happened in their life. So my life's purpose is like to become like a wind of love.
Well, Yushi, thank you again for sharing with us here on the program. And who knows, I may even find myself down there in Pasadena and we'll get the address of the temple and come by and say hello and have a little visit.
Yeah, that'd be great. And if I ever get the chance to go to San Barbara, I will definitely give you a call.
Terrific. Yushi Hajimoto has been my guest, minister of the Happy Science and the temple down in Pasadena, Los Angeles area. We encourage you to go to okawabooks.com to check out the works that are out there. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true and hopefully to help you to achieve the happiness in your life that we all deserve. Until next time, love Talal.